This is Playing Around with Paige Renee.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Playing Around. I'm your host, Paige Renee, and we have Teddy G. I'm very upset right now. I want to cry.
Paige, you just mentioned why you're so upset, and I understand it. Share it with the audience, would you?
So I went to Twitter, as everyone does, and I was going to give Phil a big congratulations again upon reflection of his amazing win. And I went to tag Phil, and his username was unavailable. So that means one thing. I have been blocked by the 2021 PGA champion. And I don't know why. I'm very sad about it. I don't know how to react right now. I'm shaken up. It's the first time I've ever been blocked by like a big celebrity. I've never been blocked by someone that I didn't feel like I deserved it. I have been blocked by people that I definitely have deserved it before, but I don't feel like this one is a deserving one.
Phil is the man of the people. He is Mr. Thumbs Up. How could he be throwing shade on you like this? I mean, look, we know you're in a Bryson song, so Bryson or his people know that you're a bit of a Bryson hater, and there are other guys. You know, I was watching Patrick Cantlay this weekend, and I was rooting against him because whenever I've picked him and bet on him, he loses. So I was like, oh, great, he's going to backdoor a top five or top 10 this week. So I have certain guys, but this one, I don't get. What do you suspect?
I'm not quite sure. I went back through all of my tweets, especially yesterday during the PGA. It could have potentially been the one where I said, you know, Phil could shoot a 65 or an 80. You're just not sure. Maybe he took that as a diss. Or maybe that I said that he needs at least a 5-shot lead going into 18. That one also could, you know, have hit a little hard.
That's funny.
But I thought it was funny. And, you know, even when it comes to Bryson, Bryson's probably the one person that I feel should definitely dislike me and or block me. But I also, when I talk about everyone, I feel that I'm trying to give an opinion. I feel like when you look at, you know, especially sports media, so many announcers and writers are so scared to be critical of players. I clearly see why now. I know why now. But I've always really tried to be, you know, to give an opinion, especially when a lot of people are also, you know, random fans of the game are also giving this opinion. And even when I talk about Bryson, sometimes I have been a little harsh, but I've also given him a lot of praise too. It's not just one side where I'm constantly always hating on him. When he does something well, I'm never afraid to give him, you know, a good job, pat on the back. That's awesome. And especially lately, I've been very nice towards Bryson.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Phil, I don't feel like I've ever, I think maybe the only thing I've ever said is he's a little bit old. He's a little bit older. I mean, that's a fact. Not a nice one, but it's a fact. And that I wanted him to retire. But I said that jokingly because I selfishly want to see him in the booth. And I feel like I have always explained that very clearly.
Yes.
I'm not saying, you know, he's never going to. I actually did say I don't think he's ever going to win again. But in my defense, you look at the stats and they weren't that. Okay, I see why I blocked. I could potentially see why I was blocked. But I selfishly said I want him to retire because, you know, he wasn't contending at the level that he used to be. And I would love to see him in the booth. And I think that would be great for golf. It was never because of anything that Phil was doing wrong. It's because he is so great as a golf personality, which I felt like his career was starting to morph into. When you look at Phil Mickelson winning the PGA Championship, I don't think anyone suspected that. Anyone thought of that. And I don't think it was, you know, unfair or unkind of me to say that I potentially could see him not winning ever again. And it's a great thing that he did win. And that was it. So, yeah, this is a bit surprising. I'm sad about it. And I don't really know how to react. But it's made me rethink all of my life choices, everything that I've ever said on the podcast, all of the tweets that I've put out. So I'm sorry, Phil Mickelson, if you were listening to this. which you are definitely not going to be. But if anyone who knows him can send this his way, I'm very sorry if I ever offended you or hurt you in any way. And also on that tune, I'm sorry, Bryson, if I've ever offended you or hurt you.
Enough with the sorries. Come on, Paige. They're celebrities. They can take a little bit of a hit. Let's go. I mean,
well, it's not, you know, like you athletes are a bit of babies. And it's just, I think I'm a little bit shooketh right now because
this pod vibe is off to a bad start.
No, but also, you know, during the week I had a tweet about LeBron James, which I thought was very funny, and people were jumping on me as being a hater. There was a big article written about it, how I was brutally honest about LeBron James. And I'm honestly just very sick of seeing that all the time, where I can't even make a funny joke about someone anymore. Yeah. I am not a LeBron hater. Yeah. I have never once said that I hate LeBron. But if you look at LeBron's antics on the court, he likes to... he plays it up a little bit, you know, and so would I. If you're trying to win a game, you're going to do everything you want to do. But he acts a little bit on the court, which is fine. And I made a joke about it. And then it turns into this whole thing about how I'm brutally honest about LeBron James and I hate LeBron James. And I'm like, I just said Space Jam 2 is going to be good because he's a superb actor.
Yes.
How is that me hating LeBron James? And so it's just very frustrating when I do say something with either like a sarcastic tone or where it's meant to be funny and it is twisted into being something. And even the things that I have said about Bryson, the good things are never put in those articles. And it's always like, Paige has the harsh truth about Bryson. It's like, come on, guys, seriously? And that's frustrating. Over time, that is, it is frustrating. And it makes me feel like, okay, is this detrimental to my career, being honest or giving my opinion because of the way things are twisted? And then having, you know, the biggest sports heroes in the game block you. It's like, is it worth it anymore?
It is, as you know, now I'm not talking to you as a co-host. I'm talking to you as a follower of Paige who enjoys your content. That was a great tweet about Space Jam 2. Plus, had that double, you know, the double entendre, the different way where you could plug, you know, your favorite movie. Because you probably want to be a part of Space Jam 3. You want to get into this series. So that was very clever of you to express your love for Space Jam. And no, I mean, at a certain level, like, if people have a problem with these tweets, it's on them. Fucking grow up. I mean, you're allowed to express your opinion. That was a funny one about LeBron. He is. I love LeBron, but that doesn't mean he's perfect. That doesn't mean all of his stuff has been great. I mean, he had a tweet, you know, 4 or 6 weeks ago related to the police, I won't get into, that I thought was awful. And on the court, he is a total actor and prima donna. That said, like 98% of LeBron is awesome. And he's creating schools and he's an amazing player and he wins championships everywhere he goes. So we are allowed to have some light criticism and to mock these celebrities. But the Phil thing is surprising. Are you sure you didn't at one point have an Instagram post where you like drank his coffee and spit it out and said, like, this is the worst shit I've ever tasted?
No, I've literally always been so nice to Phil and always very supportive of his career and everything that he's doing. I think he's truly so great for the game, and we are lucky to have him. Someone of his stature to be able to connect with people on such a personal level through his social media and all of the fun activations he does through, you know, the matches and always trying to be creative with new ideas to bring golf to more people. I once said anything that I think he could have taken in a negative way. And so that is why that one is surprising. But, you know, regarding your commentary, I do think that if I'm going to sit here and, you know, tell these guys, hey, have a good sense of humor, I'm joking around, that I also can't be hypocritical about it if someone comes at me for something that I do, which is something I definitely still need to work on. You know, for example, the Rick Shields beef drama that was happening. I did get upset about that, but that wasn't really solely based on anything that Rick Shields did. It was based on years of like past trauma of people who I thought were my friends backstabbing me in a professional way. And that is where all of that anger came out. Rick Shields, on his podcast, he ended up apologizing, and he apologized to me personally after I reached out to him personally. So, Rick, I want to thank you so much for doing that. It really meant a lot to me. But, you know, it's a hard balance of taking it and wanting to stick up for yourself. And yeah. I'm still struggling with that, where like when someone comes at me or if they're critical of something that I do, is it time for me to defend myself and stand up for myself? Or does that come off as me being like a whiny little bitch? So it's hard. That's what's so hard. And I think I'm still trying to find that balance in my content and my personal life, because I don't want to seem like I am attacking, you know, these guys, or I'm always coming at Bryson, but I can't take any hate towards myself, which yes. I don't think is true. But in the beginning of my career, I stood there and I did nothing. I never said anything. I never stood up for myself, and I regret that. And so now I think I've taken it almost too far, where I get, you know, a little too worked up at times. I can still voice my opinion without being as, you know, emotional as, you know, people like to say, but I am an emotional person. I talk with a lot of passion, and when I get a little worked up, you know, I go from 0 to 100. That's just who I am. But again, it's finding that balance, which I have not found yet. But I do understand that if I'm going to be critical of other people, that I need to also take criticism. But when is it too much? Or, you know, it's hard. It's just really hard to be like in this position and like handle all of it correctly all the time, and knowing what to say and what not to say, and what to say to, you know, be entertaining, but to not piss off the people who matter. And it's a real hard balance. And that's something that, you know, I'm thinking about right now, just with like Phil blocking me.
Yeah.
It's like, what do I do? How do I proceed in life when you see, you know, especially when I see my male counterparts in media, especially golf media, who are more outspoken than I am and have actually said things against Phil in a negative way that, you know, I would not take well. Yeah, I see Phil interacting with their content, but he blocks me. So that's also where it's a bit confusing for me. It's like, why is that fair, where a guy can be outspoken and it's seen as funny or entertaining, but when I say it, I'm just being like a spiteful bitch?
I have a fairly direct line into Phil, straight through his PR guy. Do you want me to look into this page? How are we going to handle this?
We'll just let it breathe for a second and see what happens. And hopefully, if I keep kissing ass enough, that he'll unblock me at some point.
This is sad. No, it's a tough thing with haters. Like in my last life, I was a college football writer, writing about Big Ten and Notre Dame. And you, as a big college football fan, know the passions involved, whether we're talking about Pitt or Notre Dame or other schools. So you can imagine how fans get. I was very critical at times of Jim Harbaugh. So I had Michigan fans all over me because I went to Northwestern, and there's kind of a Northwestern-Illinois rivalry. A lot of U of I fans are all over me. Notre Dame fans couldn't figure out if I loved them or hated them. Of course, I tried to explain. I'm like, I don't give a shit. I just want the good stories, or I want to go to a nice warm weather bowl game. So if they need a win to get to the Fiesta Bowl, go ahead and win. That's really how I look at this stuff. You know, fans, they don't understand that, like, we're rooting for better stories. We're rooting for people we like. We're rooting for good bowl destinations. Like, we're not so... you know, we're not chanting the fight song in the press box. We are deadly quiet in the press box. We often don't care who wins unless it helps us. So, yeah, I mean, I would always go through that on Twitter. Do you block the guy? Do you mute the guy? Do you respond with a joke? Do you respond with some hate? I had some jackass former Chicago sports writer take a shot at me last week in a column. And I'm, of course, not going to respond because he's just so desperate for attention. That's the last thing I'm going to give him. So, you know, the Phil thing, though, is confounding. It would bother me a little bit. And I think once you're ready, I think we need to look into this and find out what happened.
Yeah, I just want to make amends at this point.
You didn't do anything wrong.
I know, but maybe I did. And it was just, you know, misconstrued in a negative way, which was never my intention. And I think that's something that's also very difficult for me, is because I have a very kind heart. And I feel like, you know, I am very sensitive, and I'm always thinking of like other people and their feelings. And, you know, I never want to hurt anyone. But I also have to balance that with being an outspoken media personality.
Yes.
And it's just so difficult all the time because I do want to be funny. And at times I do want to be edgy because I don't think a lot of that is in golf. And it would be so boring for everyone listening to this podcast if I was like, I love Bryson. I love Tiger. I love Phil. I love, you know, and it's like, if you never say anything bad about anyone, then that's boring and it's untruthful as well. And even, you know, it's just really hard. It's hard, Teddy. I'm having a hard morning. I'm sad. I just want to crawl up in a ball and cry. Phil just ruined my day.
It's very rough. We need to launch an investigation. I believe he, in the end, will be the one apologizing, not you, Paige. You've done nothing wrong. So is the Rick Shields thing put to bed? I listened to them. I feel like those guys are pretty entertaining. They're reasonable. They have lovely accents. I didn't quite catch what they were saying at the end about the influencers. Maybe they were saying there are some folks, I believe, I said, who are not really a fan of the game of golf. Maybe they just look pretty and put themselves in golf outfits for the sake of getting followers, but clearly they were not putting you in that camp.
No, and Rick and I had like a private discussion too, which was very nice. And I think I'm going to potentially go on his podcast. I would love to have him on my podcast as well. I think the producer, his name is Guy, doesn't like me very much, and you can tell he doesn't. Mm. But no, Rick was great. He was awesome. I think what he was mentioning about the influencers, and this is something I have discussed on the podcast before, is once this like hot girl Instagram golf girl phase thing happened, you saw a lot of models picking up the game, and they did that to get followers or yes. money or yes. new deals. And I think a lot of people do have an issue with that. And I also have a bit of an issue with it because people blame me for it as if like I started this trend and I'm bad for golf because of that, because I'm getting people into the game for not the right reasons. But I think anyone who's coming into the game, if these girls are picking up the game of golf, that's one more girl who's playing golf.
Yeah.
That's awesome. We need that. Whatever, if they'd start it for the wrong reasons, they end up enjoying it. Who cares? There's more people playing golf. But if you look at, and I think this is what my problem was with the question that they asked Sophie, was if I'm good for golf.
Right.
Anything is good for golf. Bryson's great for golf. I'm great for golf. Rick Shields is great for golf. Everyone who has an impact on the game, negative or positive, is good for golf because that means more eyes on the sport, more entertainment. I think they should have asked the question, does showing skin and being like using your image as a woman, does that give the wrong impression to young girls? I think that would have been a more valid and interesting discussion, and something that I also struggle with internally. If, you know, I am a good role model for certain reasons, and if I am being, if I'm hurting women by self-image,
or, right.
you know, that is a very interesting discussion. And that's where I wish they went with it instead of just saying, am I good or bad for golf? Yes, I'm right. clearly good for golf. We've discussed that. It's fine. Let's move on. But I do think that is, you know, a larger discussion, which we can definitely have on the podcast at some point. But I do also struggle with that. I'm just struggling with a lot of things internally.
You're struggling.
Today.
I should get you on the golf course today because you would probably start with a quad, then a triple, then whatever 5-over par is. And I would totally dust you.
No. So I played golf last night because I was inspired by the Phil Wynn. And anytime I see, you know, something cool like that, it makes me want to go out on the golf course.
Yeah.
And so I did a 3-club challenge. So I just played 9 holes with my driver, 7-iron, and my putter, and I shot even par.
God, seriously?
Yeah.
Any greenside bunkers?
I was in a greenside bunker on number 9, but it was luckily a par 5. So I was there in 2. I went driver, 7-iron out of the bunker, and then 2-putted for my par. That was fun. So I always play better when I have like a lot of anxiety or things on my head, because I don't think about my game. When I think about my game, that's when everything, you know, goes to shit. But if I'm like focused on everything else, then I don't even think about my swing.
I think when you play me, it's going to be the one club challenge. You get one club and I get 14 clubs. And then I think it becomes a fair fight.
One, I do the one club. So just me with my putter the entire round.
I'll let you have a 3-wood.
Okay. 3-3 is good.
3-wood makes a little more sense. You know, probably hard to drive it. I don't know. You've probably tried to drive it with a putter. Can you hit it 150 yards?
I have never, because I don't want to damage my putter in any way. I love my swag putter and that thing is beautiful. I don't want any dings or anything on it. But I was doing a fun contest with a long drive guy and he outdrove me with his putter.
Yeah.
And he just like bladed it and it just rolled forever. And I was like, yep, I'm putting golf forever.
All those tour pros, I think, can do that. They can get on their knees. They can probably hit it backwards, blindfolded, lefty, every way. They can certainly dust me, and some of them could dust you.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break before we get into the Phil Mickelson PGA Championship mega win. But before we do take that break, I'm going to go on my apology tour. Phil, I'm so sorry. I am so, so sorry. Bryson, if I've ever hurt your feelings, I'm so sorry. Terrible. To anyone I have ever offended, I am sorry. I'm trying to be a better person, a better version of me. I swear. Rick Shields, I'm sorry. I'm glad we made amends. I will see you guys soon as I take a quick breather. And we are back. We're going to talk about the PGA Championship, what I would say was one of the most enjoyable majors I have watched in the longest time. Apart from the 2019 Tiger Woods Masters win, this tournament was incredible from start to finish. And that final round had my heart beating like crazy. I had anxiety watching these guys. I have never seen so many massive swings in the leaderboard from like one hole to the next. And it was like that constantly the entire round. You never knew what was going to happen. And I think it's because obviously Phil was in the lead and that's just how he plays golf, which is so exciting. He is not the type of guy who is like a fairways greens two putt, you know, type of guy. He will hit it all over the golf course, hit these, you know, amazing shots. And you are left wondering how he just made a par or birdie from where he was at. But we'll start at day one of the PGA Championship. Let's just talk about Kiawah for a little bit. I think that golf course was an incredible venue for a major.
Has there been a better PGA Championship? I mean, there were cool stories like when Davis Love wins. You know, that's not something that gets all of national attention, but that was really cool because his dad taught and, you know, inspiration. And there's a rainbow. That one was good. So there have been some good PGAs, but there's been none better than this. I mean, first of all, props to the PGA for being open-minded in terms of their dates. I mean, obviously, it used to be in August. And then it would get kind of overlooked by, I think people would be so excited for football season to start and there's just so much else on the calendar. So they agree, they move it to May, and now they've got this great slot where everybody's paying attention. The course was unbelievable. I mean, it's such a good course because it yields, you know, eagles, but lurking is double bogeys and triple bogeys and worse. And it's beautiful visually, and you've got the wind, and you've got a great champion in Rory. So this had to be the best week for the PGA Championship. And just to address the start, I mean, I was watching, I think you were too, Phil's first drive Thursday was hideous. I mean, it was like a squirty little slice ball that I can certainly relate to. It was his first hole performance was so bad that on PointsBet, his odds went from 200 to 1 to 400 to 1 based on one hole.
And I'm the hater.
What's that?
I said, and I'm the hater in this group. Jeez.
I texted you, I think, or I texted my buddy Matt Perno, and I was like, did you see that? So this guy, Matt Perno, he had said before the event that he was betting on Phil. And of course, I laughed as much as he could, but he did. Now, what's funny is he usually bets pretty good sums of money, but he had only $10 on Phil to win at 200 to 1. It ended up making for good social media during the event because I posted his ticket when PointsBet was offering a cash out. I think it was 500, 900? At a certain point, you know, there were numbers like that. And I asked, like, what would you do? And a good number of people were like, cash that thing out. There is no way. Fortunately, he did not cash out. I put the winning ticket up yesterday. Paige, a small part of me is glad I did not wager on Phil, because it would have been so hard for me not to cash out. But this guy didn't. He is he's a good points bet client, and he made his 2K.
Yeah, I mean, the venue was perfect. It was so nice to have fans back again, just the energy. You could just feel it. It just felt normal. Felt like normal life. And I think that's also what made this major feel so much better than all the previous ones during quarantine and, you know, the COVID era, was the, just having those people there again, the screaming, the cheering, the yes, ups and downs, the booing of Brooks Koepka, which was, yeah, a bit odd, which we will get into. But that is what made it so, so special. Yes, Kiowa was an amazing venue, but to have people back, it felt like normal life again. It was just like such a, like a feel good time, just watching, you know, just everyone just have such an enjoyable time out there and watching golf, loving golf, cheering for golf. And exactly, it just made me feel so good.
Yeah, I mean, it almost made all the shit they yell after people swing tolerable. Almost.
I don't even care anymore, because I'm like, without having it and being so quiet, I will, yeah, take anything I can get, sure, because it's just so nice to have people back again. But they just yell stupidest shit.
Stupid shit. Yeah, I feel like that was a part of why everybody was mobbing Phil, and then Brooks got caught up in the wash there, obviously, at the end on the 72nd hole. I think it was a way for, like, people, Americans, to say, okay, COVID is basically over. We're not in masks. We're outdoors. I mean, it's not exactly over, but I think that's, this is their way of, like, there's just been so much pent up frustration and annoyance over the last 14, 15 months. It exploded there. So it's a combination of Phil and people just being, like, so happy that they could do stuff that seemed normal, you know, in the previous, in the pre-COVID times.
Yeah, I will say that 2021 has been a very weird year of golf. I mean, I tweeted this, I said, if you told me that Jordan Spieth at the beginning of 2021, if Jordan Spieth was going to get his game back and Phil Mickelson was going to win a major, I would have laughed in your face. I like never saw either of those things coming. But that's, again, what makes golf so great, is that you never know when your game is going to come back or you're going to win a tournament. And this felt like an older leaderboard, like a leaderboard of 2015. You had Ricky Fowler even back in the mix. You know, Jordan Spieth played okay.
Boosty, Harrington.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, it just felt like an older golf tournament, which was just so much fun to watch. And then Brooks Koepka, even, you know, I know, yeah, that he plays so well in the majors and you expect, oof, him to always contend. But after his knee surgery and not playing so well this year, yes, he got the win at the Waste Management, but he missed two cuts in a row coming into the PGA. I did not expect him to honestly play all that well. It's hard to deal or swing or even focus on anything else when you're so worried about your knee or a part of your body not being in 100% condition. And he even mentioned that too. And this is something I did feel really bad about Brooks. I understand fans being for someone else. Everyone was clearly rooting for Phil Mickelson. They wanted Phil to win. I wanted, yeah, Phil to win. It was just such a great story and we wanted to see it. But that doesn't mean that you have to boo Brooks and be, you know, obviously against him. And Brooks came out and he said that when the crowd was all around him on 18, that he felt like people were coming at his knee. And that is unbelievably scary. And I feel so bad for Brooks. I can't imagine the amount of panic that he had. One bump to his knee and he could be out for the longest time. And the disrespect of people towards Brooks is not okay. I can get not liking someone, but wanting to actually physically harm someone in that situation is so wrong on so many levels.
Yeah, if you're a golf fan and you have to boo, the only proper time to do it is the Ryder Cup. That's it. You get one chance every 2 years to boo. Even then, I wouldn't, but I understand it's part of the show. If I was a European, I'd definitely be booing Patrick Reed. So I'd be in that. Even the President's Cup, I wouldn't boo. because it just doesn't mean that much. No disrespect for the President's Cup.
You're getting blocked by the President's Cup now.
Just block Paige. Let me be.
All right, I block.
Yeah, don't boo Brooks. I mean, Brooks is an American and he's a great player. And I thought he was going to miss the cut. I mean, my two options to bet on for miss the cut this week were Brooks at plus 150 and DJ at plus 350. And DJ was the right call. And it is when you're talking about unforeseen things now, like Justin Thomas, DJ, and a bunch of good players, you know, suddenly can't play. It just goes to show you how hard it is. What's amazing, too, is I felt like Brooks was a complete disaster yesterday. He still only lost by two. I mean, how many short putts did he miss?
Yeah.
You know, he put himself in terrible trouble and then was 40 yards from the green and hit it only 15 yards. And it just looked like he had no control of his game. And he still ended up tied for second, which is a tribute to him, considering he could, like, you know, wasn't walking well. So, truth of it is, I mean, the security team, I mean, they really got overrun on Sunday. And I think it was Jim Nance who said it at one point, like, they have lost control of the situation. And the part that I don't get is, like, that they just need to plan better. At that point, there's only one group on the golf course.
Yeah.
So you can bring in all your security guys from the first and ninth and fourth and 12th holes, and they should all be focused on that. I mean, you have to anticipate it a little better. And, you know, you have to protect the players at that point and make sure that something terrible doesn't happen. Like, Paige, I was thinking from a betting perspective, what happens if, like, somebody jumps on Phil Mickelson's back and then he's got, like, a shoulder injury? And then does he have to putt out on 18? Like, what happens if he can't play? What do you think? What's in the rules of golf related to that?
Well, it's really scary, especially, like, in this day and age. You just never know, like, what someone's going to do or why yes. they're doing it. And you just don't know. If I was, like, in a huge crowd of people, I would feel very uncomfortable that, you know, something bad could potentially happen. And they, like you're saying, they just need to prepare a little bit better for those moments and just to make sure. I mean, it's a long day. A lot of people are out in the sun. They're drinking yes. a lot. You know,
hammered.
People do stupid shit when they're drunk. And even if their intentions aren't bad, like, they could have, like you're saying, they could have just jumped on Phil. Just to jump on Phil.
To trip him and, like
yeah, seriously. Who so knows?
What do you think the rules of golf would say? What happens if you suffer an injury, but it's not your fault? Like, what happens if you get run over by a golf cart with one shot left in a tournament?
Or, like, do you remember when Tiger was playing in the Masters and the guy slipped and almost took him out? Like, what if
absolutely.
That happened? You know, like, that could have happened.
Tiger handled that so well. I think I was on the golf course when that happened and saw it happen. And I was like, that guy is going to become the Steve Bartman of golf. And I think everybody knows who Steve Bartman is, but he was the guy who, you know, tried to catch a foul ball against the Marlins at Wrigley Field and got completely demonized. And his life has never been the same. And I remember we asked Tiger about that after the round, and he was so classy. He just, you know, completely pulled the guy off the hook, and it never became a thing. But at the time, right, the guy's sort of backing up and he accidentally, like, trips Tiger, who's had 1,400 different injuries. Glad that was nothing. So, yeah, I don't know. You haven't answered my question, though. What do you think is in the rules of golf? If somebody is injured but not their fault, can they mark and come back the next day?
I honestly don't know what the rule is for that one. And I also was confused with the rule where Phil got to take that drop after it was moved.
After the ball was handled?
I was confused on that rule. I didn't know that you could actually do that. I thought once someone picked it up or moved it and dropped it, that's just where the ball lies now. I didn't know you actually get to then replace it to where it was before.
That is the rare time where I think I did know the proper rule and you didn't. Yeah, but it is fascinating where you're relying on just some, you know, joker out there to say, hey, where was my ball? And you couldn't exactly tell in the interaction if Phil was asking, how was the lie? But yeah, if you're Phil, I mean, of course, you're going to put it in as good a lie as possible and use that as a little break. But that was a very interesting moment. It was also strange how, right, they're waste bunkers. They're not bunkers.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Patrick Reed was, you know, disappointed that he couldn't cheat like normal, that it was actually, he was allowed to graze it in his backswing.
I was going to ask you if Patrick Reed was in that situation where he was asking the crowd, did someone pick it up? Oh, I think that golf Twitter would have been lit up calling Patrick Reed a cheater.
There's no question about it. There would have been a lot of videos surfacing saying, no, 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 his lie was only like a 6 out of 10, and then it was a 9 out of 10. And that's the problem when you've got a history of, you know, fumbling these things away. You never get the benefit of the doubt. Plus, when you're popular like Phil, nobody really cares. So nobody other than us is even talking about it. But I do love those moments because the rules of golf are just often so strange.
And we have to talk about the final round because yes, it was up and down the entire time. And I have a theory, and I knew Phil was going to win after he bogeyed the first hole and Brooks birdied the first hole, because all of the best rounds I have ever had, I've started with a bogey. I have never started the round with a birdie and ended up playing well. If I start with a bogey, I shoot like a career round of golf. And if I start the round with a birdie, it's over. Game over.
I hope you make an eagle the first hole we play together, Paige, or else I'm going to be very concerned. But yeah, that was certainly an interesting sign there. I mean, I was thinking about it, and I don't know how deep you want to get into it. Like, for people who are listening who are maybe wondering, like, why is it such a big deal with Phil? Like, I was just sort of laying out, I feel like people my age, at least, have had like a 30 to 35 year relationship with Phil.
Yeah.
And he's had so many ups and downs. Like, he was the cheesy phenom coming out of Arizona State. And then he was like the foil to Tiger. Then he was the guy who like could not win a major, right? He didn't win his first major until he was maybe 33, something like that. Wins the major and wins the Masters and is like inspired by his wife, Amy, and breast cancer. So that was amazing. Then he's like the know-it-all guy who was annoying a lot of people and talking about his like subcutaneous fat and seemingly has the answer, and people, you know, people definitely lose their patience with him.
Was Phil the original Bryson?
In a lot of ways, you know, I think less mathematical, but certainly more like, I have the answers to everything in society. Yeah. And, you know, all those kind of, just a total know-it-all. And who likes a know-it-all? You know, then he became like the choker with the US Open with Winged Foot. So kind of sympathetic. Then he became like a man of the people in New York. So he'd go to Winged Foot and like the crowds in New York would love him, which I always thought, it's like, that's cool. I mean, like, he's a Southern California guy, but, you know, he would at least have like eye contact and the thumbs up and all that kind of stuff. Then he wins the British Open in 2013, the Open Championship. So that's all good. Then he has his whole life as like a social media star where he's really funny. Then he's like the rebel at the US Open hitting the ball as it's moving. And then it's Phil Mickelson. He's like elder statesman who's never going to win again. And we all write him off. But talk about the fountain of youth. Paige, I sent you this clip yesterday where Phil talks about like this diet and, you know, fasting and all this stuff he did. Like, this guy at age 45 or 46 could have just been like, I've had a great career.
Yeah.
Let me just kind of enjoy it now. And instead, he became like big into fitness and this coffee concoction. And I got to give him all the props in the world for that.
100%. Phil can never be count out because of his game. When he hits it well, he's going to be in contention because he still hits it a very long way. He's not losing any distance. And I think that is a credit to his hard work in the gym and his diet and making swing changes that he knew he had to make to contend when it matters. Phil has one of the best short games we will ever see, maybe of all time, ever. And we'll probably, no one will have a better short game than Phil. At times, his putting, I would say, can be a little streaky. He's almost like Jordan Spieth in a sense where he either looks like he's going to make everything or nothing. You just, you never know. I don't know how someone can look so confident and so uncomfortable over a putt at the same time. But with him, his game is always up and down. And that's what makes him so exciting to watch. Also very stressful for a final round of a major with a one-shot lead. And there were two-shot swings on majority of the holes. Like, there was never a time where you could just sit back and enjoy Phil winning.
Yeah. Because
you didn't know what was going to happen. And when he got it up to a 5-shot lead on Sunday, he fell apart a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he got up to a 5-shot lead on Sunday, hits in the water.
Yep.
And it was just constantly like up and down, going back and forth, and the hole out from the bunker, the, you know, amazing short game shots, the putts that he had to make, the stress every single time he was on the tee, I was like gripping my couch and being like, where is this going to go? Cause you never know.
Yeah.
But again, that's why he's so much fun to watch. And I think that's why he is like the man of the people, because his game is so relatable to all of us.
Yes.
And it's like, I understand, you know, missing fairways or hitting in the shit and having to get up and down and making those putts. And it's just so exciting. I've never seen a major where it was that back and forth, and you just never know what's going to happen until he finally won on the 72nd hole.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason why people like you and me who like study the game and analyze it thought he had no chance. I mean, two big reasons. One, he had talked about like mental fatigue and about how as he's gotten older, it's just like harder to keep your focus. So even when he gets off to, you know, he scores well, start 70 and then 69 and 70. Like, I was so skeptical that he was going to be able to keep it together, because he specifically said that part was hard. Also, he is a high ball hitter. So nobody thought in these winds that come off the water, come off the ocean, that he was going to be able to handle it. And when he had that totally abbreviated finish and he hooked that ball, you know, into the water on, is that 12 or is it, you know, so that was more concerning because we thought he was going to need those sort of sawed off shots.
Yeah.
I've always liked Phil because he's so opinionated, you know, like you. I like opinionated people. That's why he should certainly unblock you and respect you. I was covering a BMW championship one time at Cog Hill, and Reese Jones had redone the course. And Phil hates Reese Jones courses, in part because like a lot of them were US Open courses. And again, he has like that beef with the USGA. And I saw Phil do something I'd never seen before. Like a lot of these new greens, like they had ridges. So Phil was maybe 30 feet on the green, and instead of putting it, he chipped it from the green, because that was his way of protesting and saying like, these greens are bullshit. I am going to go ahead and chip this ball instead of putting it 30 feet. And I always, you know, respected his individuality on that, certainly.
I mean, it's funny because I feel like you look on Twitter and everyone's like, never count Phil out. Like, we love Phil. No one thought Phil was going to win. No one. No one was talking about Phil. No one was mentioning Phil. No one thought he was going to win this tournament. I don't even think coming into Sunday, a lot of people thought he was going to get it done. There was always just a little bit of doubt. So let's compare Phil's win compared to Tiger's 2019 Masters win.
Yeah.
Which one was better? Which one was more meaningful? And I don't think one is better than the other. I think both of them are both amazing in their own right. But I feel with Tiger, there was more confidence around Tiger to get it done because it's Tiger Woods. But with Phil, I do think there was kind of that doubt, like, is he going to get it done? Is he going to pull, you know, the same kind of move he did at Wingfoot? You never know. But in Tiger's career, he never really did that where he just fully like kind of collapsed.
Yeah, exactly. With Tiger is much less dramatic. I mean, what's crazy about like that final round of Tiger at the Masters is that there really weren't very memorable shots. He just played it smart. He played it safe. He got on the green at number 12. He just played so solidly and basically let everybody else fall by the wayside.
Yeah.
I mean, totally different viewing experiences for me, if you want to hear about this quickly. Like at the Masters, I was there covering the event. The cool part about that day was they had bad weather coming in late in the day. Yeah. So they shifted everything earlier. They actually went off in threesomes, which they never would have done on Sunday. That turned out to be a huge advantage for Tiger because he was able to intimidate two players rather than one. Yeah. And he was able to see two shots often before he hit. The thing with Phil yesterday was I was flying back from New York and, you know, I was like, God, am I going to be able to watch this on the flight? I'm going to order the Wi-Fi. I'm going to see if it works. Like, it didn't work. So Phil was done with like the eighth hole when we left New York. And then I was in this just debate during the flight, like, am I going to try to watch this in the cab when I get home, or am I going to go into media blackout mode? And then, you know, our boss Len was texting some stuff when I landed, but I decided to go into complete blackout mode. And fortunately, I was traveling with my wife, so she was able to order the Uber on her phone and I was able to get home and enjoy it on the DVR because I knew it was going to be something that was totally memorable. So it was different for me because I wasn't watching it live, but clearly this round had so much more drama than Tiger's did. You agree?
100%. It was literally up and down the entire time. You never knew what was going to happen. Like I was saying, when Brooks made a birdie, Phil would make a bogey. When Phil made a birdie, Brooks was making a bogey. It was just crazy to see it, the back and forth the entire time, the amazing shots they were hitting, the missed shots, and then Brooks coming back too, a little bit. Like you said, he was out of it pretty much the entire time. And then all of a sudden, he was kind of in the mix. And it was like, if he makes a birdie here, you know, it could only be a one-shot lead or they could be pretty close. And Phil with a one-shot lead going into 18, you know, you still have to execute every single shot. It's difficult. It's very, very hard to do. And like you said, there's just something with Phil and majors that, you know, sometimes you, there's just a little tension there between them.
And just a little.
And I'm sure that jumped in his mind too. I can't imagine that, you know, that was out of his mind. And especially like when he was talking about the concentration, nothing is harder on someone than a major, and especially a major on a very difficult golf course with difficult conditions, especially wind. Playing in wind is the most mentally exhausting thing you could ever do when it comes to golf. It's the hardest weather condition to play in because the wind is constantly swirling. You're having to work on your numbers. It's a lot of guessing. By the end of playing in rounds in wind, I was done, completely donezo. And so for Phil to be that sharp through all four rounds of golf and to never let down, and even when he did have a bad shot or when he hit in the water, he looked confident. You could tell that he was from start to finish. He had a game plan. He was sticking to his game plan. He never changed it. And I think that's something that Phil tends to not do a lot. He tends to hit these crazy shots or go for things. And I think part of that could potentially just be a lack of concentration. He's been doing this for such a long time that he almost needs to hit those shots to keep himself interested in playing. Because again, it's like, can you imagine year after year playing this many tournaments, so many rounds of golf? Like, I think he does it because it's fun for him. Like, he loves seeing what he can pull off. And he never took that risk this final round, which was so smart for him to do. I think a lot of the credit goes to his brother, who was on his bag. I feel like he can talk to Phil on a, you know, a very personal level. They know each other probably better than anyone else. And I feel like Phil definitely listens to Tim and they have a very good relationship. And I think Tim, he should get a ton of credit for this major win because they were a dynamic duo on Sunday and they got it done. And that's all that matters.
Yeah, I mean, Bones McKay is previous caddy. I don't know if there is a caddy hall of fame because I think I went to something with the Murray brothers, but I digress. Bones would absolutely be in that caddy hall of fame. He's one of the best. We hear him now providing commentary on NBC, I believe, and he's wonderful. But this is also what makes this win so monumental for Phil. Like it was a bit of a bummer that like Amy and the kids weren't there, right?
They
were not there. So, I mean, that would have made it even better. And that's what made Tiger's win at the Masters. Obviously, you know, that was beyond the cherry on top.
Yeah,
I mean, to see him with Charlie and all that. But so Phil didn't have his family, didn't have his, you know, Amy and the kids there, but he did have Tim there. And this is the first major victory for the Mickelson brothers together. So can you imagine like the rest of their lives at Thanksgiving or whenever they get together, Christmas or whatnot, like they're going to be talking about this. They have this bond. Phil was able to win one without Bones when he was, you know, a 400-to-1 shot. And yeah, as you mentioned, he was still a 7-to-1 shot after the first hole on Sunday. So there was still, you know, rampant skepticism outside. And look, he had a 2-shot lead on 18 yesterday, right? I mean, he had a 2-shot lead at Wingfoot at the U.S. Open. So that is what made it so cool, knowing that at any moment things could go horribly wrong. And then the fact that they didn't made for such a satisfying ending.
Moving forward for Phil's career, one, I wish that he didn't take the USGA's invitation to the US Open, because that would have been just a massive fuck you to them by winning the PGA Championship and, you know, being able to now play in the US Open on his own merit, which would have been awesome. But moving forward, does Phil contend now? Is Phil in the mix, or was this, you know, more of like a farewell win compared to igniting a new fire under Phil?
I mean, can you imagine if he wins at Torrey Pines? So just to set it up for people who are not the biggest golf fans, Phil has won every major except the U.S. Open. He's finished in second place. Is it six times? It's like an incredible number. And he's not won the Open, and he has a lot of resentment toward the USGA. So Paige and I were in, you know, in agreement on this one that he should not have accepted this free pass. And it turned out we were right.
Because we knew he was going to win the PGA Championship. See, we're so smart.
Obviously. Come on, Phil. It would have been like totally on Phil Brand to say, thank you, USGA. But if I'm going to play at my home course, Torrey Pines, I am going to earn it. And then to go out as a 200-1 to earn it, that would have been just beyond legendary. But it's a great question now. And it's a question that we're all wondering and nobody has an answer to. He's actually supposedly playing this week at Colonial in the Charles Schwab Cup, which is interesting to play, you know, a week after. It'll be fascinating to see if he can somehow, you know, put it together. You can only imagine what's going on in his world these days. But yeah, I mean, it just brings the U.S. Open into even more focus. He will be the sentimental favorite times 100. I don't even know who's second. Every single person there on that property will be pulling for Phil. Maybe that'll help him. Maybe as a 50-year-old man, as a sentimental guy, he's going to get even more of a boost from the fans.
I mean, if Phil is going to win a U.S. Open, it's going to be at Torrey Pines. I even think that golf course fits his game really well, too. It sets up perfectly for him. Can you imagine back-to-back major winners as Phil Mickelson at age 50? Like, what the fuck? Like, honestly, what in the actual fuck? Incredible. It would be incredible. My only goal is just to be unblocked by that time so I can tag him when he wins. But he's so much fun. And even his post-round interviews, they were funny. They were smart. He was answering the questions. You look at someone like a Dustin Johnson, who is endearing in his own way, in a sense, because when he answers the questions, they were just like one word. They're a bit funny in a way, like that's like his thing. But it's nice to listen to players like a Jordan Spieth, like a Phil Mickelson,
exactly,
who actually take the time and are thoughtful with their answers. And it means so much. And he didn't stop towards the 50th interview that he did. I was watching one on the Golf Channel. It was very late at night. And he was still answering those questions with humor. He was, kind with his time. He's good. He's just good for the game. And when he plays well and he's in the mix, it's good. I'm standing by what I said, though. I need to see him in the booth at some point because I think he is going to be a rock star commentator. And I need to have Phil commentating at some point in my life. Like, that has to happen. I wish it was happening now, but I will wait to see him win more majors.
I think his price tag just jumped another 30% to 40% with that win, with his sixth major. And it's true. I mean, those are the guys that I pull for as a former sports writer. I love all the guys who are giving, even like Brooks Koepka. It's not warm and fuzzy, but that's not what we need. We need
he's
honesty.
Candid. And he's very candid.
Yeah, he's very candid. He was like, it was a great, awesome event, but like, what the fuck, people? You know, my knee is here. I'm trying to play. I'm getting swarmed. So anybody who speaks their mind, who does put some thought into it, who takes some pride, who entertains, going to get a lot of pip points out there, a lot of player performance points for that PGA Tour, that $40 million that you are not eligible for. That is a huge part of the appeal of Phil. It's interesting. Like, for years, we haven't even gotten into this, but I felt like there were Phil people and there were Tiger people.
Oh yeah.
It was kind of like Yankees, Mets, Cubs, White Sox, Giants, Jets. You really couldn't pull for both. And the people who liked Tiger were the ones who just like appreciated greatness and didn't care if he didn't give an interview all year. You know, they were just like, wow, this guy's awesome. He looks the part. He plays the part. And then there are other people more like Phil, who a soft spot for the, you know, sometimes like the tragic heroes, sometimes, the guy who can't win a U.S. Open, but then it means so much more when they do.
I grew up in a Tiger household. Like, we were Tiger fans. We always, yep, we would always root for Tiger. It's not that we ever really had anything against Phil, but, you know, we didn't grow up thinking like Phil was our favorite player. Tiger was our favorite player. But I think that changed over time, where it started to become a Phil household, where, you know, my parents really started to love Phil. And because of, like, I think the changes in his career and his personality. And I loved when he started to do social media and show more of that side of himself, because I don't think, like you're saying, I think that sometimes he can come off as a bit of a know-it-all, but I think it's part of just his personality. And I don't think sometimes he means it in a way that is like harmful. I think he's trying to be like sarcastic or funny. And he is, like, he is funny, even if it's dad jokes. Like, he is funny. Like, I like listening to Phil. I think he's always entertaining, regardless if you like him or not. He's entertaining.
And he just does it how he wants to do it. I mean, yeah, to the like Frank Sinatra soundtrack right now. He did it his way. I mean, I was covering the US Open. I'm almost sure it was the one at Marion. And Phil flies back from Philadelphia to California on like Tuesday, because I think it was Amanda was in a play and didn't want to miss the play. And then it's the US Open at Erin Hills up in Wisconsin. And Phil decides he's not even going to play in the US Open, the event that would round out his lifetime achievement in terms of, you know, a Grand Slam. And I think it was Amanda's graduation at that point. And we were just like, I can't believe it. Because actually, that course too, that Erin Hills, would have suited him well, because it was a bomber's course. And clearly, this man is a bomber. So he's never really listened to other people. He's always done it his way. But now that I'm thinking about why he blocked you, you go back five or six podcasts. I think we were talking about the team event in New Orleans and Zurich, and we were debating who we would take. And you said you would take Tiger. And I said I would take Phil. Did you mock my selection? I think you might have.
I said I wanted to win. So yeah.
Yes.
That's why I was blocked. That's why I was
blocked.
You
called Phil a loser.
I didn't call Phil a loser. Phil, I'm sorry. Be my friend. But that's like, that's hard. Okay, so let's say Phil blocked me because of that. I could talk for hours and hours and hours about how great Phil is, but I could get blocked for like one off-the-cuff comment. How unfair is that?
Oh, life is unfair, Paige. If you want, it's the worst dad line of all time. But they say, like, if you want fair, drive down to the state fair. Yeah, life is not fair, but this one is puzzling. It at least begs some examination. So, if you put me in charge, I am happy to lead the investigation.
Well, let's talk about my guy Tiger. So, do you think that this is going to ignite a fire under Tiger to get back into it? Because I don't feel like Tiger can have Phil one up him. They've always had that bit of a question.
Frenemies.
Yeah, frenemies. That's a good way to put it.
And at a certain point, it wasn't even the frog.
They were just enemies. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the Tiger camp and the Phil camp. And I think, you know, Phil probably thought Tiger's an asshole because he's kind of an asshole. And Tiger saw Phil as a phony who's always signing autographs and thumbs up and, you know, making nice with the media and sponsors. And I think Tiger couldn't conceive of somebody genuinely being that nice.
So they've had this relationship for years back and forth. I mean, Tiger has to win another major now, right? Like, it has to happen. Wow. Like, this is what he needed to get back and win again.
I hadn't thought of it. I'm glad you brought it up, Paige. Can you imagine if this does provide a final inspiration for Tiger? And it's true. This is kind of like two guys playing one-on-one on the basketball court. And all right, so Tiger is way ahead, and you know, Tiger's got like, you know, 15 buckets, and Phil's got five. But Phil, you know, he's like, all right, Tiger, I'll leave you with something. And he just like drains a three and walks off. So in some ways, Phil gets the last laugh. So maybe now Tiger says, yeah, this can't happen. I can't have Phil win the last major between the two of us. I have to get motivated. I got to get these legs right and get on out there and start training for, I guess, 2022. I mean, we're not going to see him this year, are we?
No. I'm hoping that, can you imagine? And like 2022, 2023, that it's like Phil and Tiger contending for majors and they are like in the final group. Mm. Can you just, oh my gosh, the golf world would just explode. Yeah, they would break the internet. That would just be the most amazing thing, which begs the question, though, why are we not as excited about young players as we are about these older players? I mean, we are more excited about Tiger Phil than, you know, any of the young players that are coming up. No one seems to have that same kind of impact. And it's not that Phil was an amazing player and he has an incredible career, but it hasn't been something that I don't think it could be replicated. Again, I think it's more obviously achievable than something that Tiger has done, which is going to go down in history. But why are we not finding players that we're connecting with as much as we have connected with Phil?
Yeah, I mean, we think about these young guys and they have just tons of time. They have all the career in front of them. And I'm sure Colin Morikawa and Tony Finau and Ricky Fowler, like guys who I'm looking at the leaderboard who performed well, they've got decades. Like, it's unlike Anthony Kim, who was just amazing and made a million birdies at the Masters and then you never hear from again. So I think those guys we know we'll be watching for decades. But with Phil and Tiger, you never know when it's the last one. It's like Michael Jordan, like when is the final shot? LeBron, a little bit of that case, although I think he's got a bunch of years left. Tom Brady, I guess he'll only be playing another 6 or 7 years. But that's what's, you know, we're so sentimental about in sports. Like, we've grown up with these guys and you never know when it's the last bit of greatness we're going to see.
And I think with golf too, they can have such a longer career. You know, in certain sports, their body just can't hold up until, if Michael Jordan wanted to be playing until he was 50, 60, he would be, but his body couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And because it's just such a highly physical sport, same with football. That's why it's so incredible what Tom Brady is doing at his age. But with Phil and Tiger, they could be playing, if they're hitting it long enough, they can be playing until they're probably like 50, late 50s, I would say.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, don't you think? If they're hitting it long enough with like this technology and the specialists with fitness and diet, I think they could probably extend their career until probably mid to late 50s. I don't think we're gonna see Phil win a major when he's 60, but who the fuck knows?
I mean, I should not say no way, because wasn't Tom Watson, was he 58 when he almost beat Stuart Sink?
Pretty old.
I think he was 50. He was 59 years old.
See?
And it's not like that guy has spent half his life in the gym. So, yeah, I guess I shouldn't say no way. I mean, the thought I've been in the last few years that when Phil won the Open Championship in 13, that was his swan song. He shot 66 at Muirfield, and it was absolutely awesome. And that was the topper to his career. So here we are, 8 years later, right? And he's done it. So you're right. I should not just assume that guys get worse. I mean, the prevailing wisdom in golf is that like guys become worse putters because they've got all this scar tissue and you get jittery and every bad thing comes out. But this whole fountain of youth thing is pretty amazing, man. I hope it hits me one of these days.
Just trying to enjoy being young right now before my whole life goes to shit. I don't want to get old.
You're doing okay. You're doing okay, Paige.
We're going to just wrap up with some quick hit topics before we end this episode. Teddy, do you wear makeup? Because A-Rod is putting out a makeup line for men. It got a lot of hate on social media. A lot of people were not about it. They were hating on A-Rod. They just think it's not necessary. I think it's interesting. I think that a lot of men want to look their best, and sometimes they don't always know what to use. I think that a guy who utilizes sunscreen is a huge turn on. A lot of guys don't even know what sunscreen is or how to apply it.
Seriously?
They're like adverse to like sunscreen. It's the weirdest thing ever. It's like, come on, guys, just put some sunscreen on. Your skin's going to look so much better. You don't want to have like those wrinkles or like sunspots or like you don't want to get sun cancer. Like, just put some sunscreen on. Or like a good face wash or a moisturizer. Guys think that like all of that's like makeup. And it's not makeup. It's just like skincare and taking care of your skin. But I think guys could use a little powder sometimes. I mean, they're a little shiny. If they're breaking out a little bit, you know, if they wanted to go to like an important meeting or a date, just a little cover up. Totally fine. I am for makeup.
How about if they're on air?
On air, like on movies, like guys on movie sets are wearing makeup. Guys on air are wearing makeup. It's not a bad thing. I don't think guys need to be like so freaked out about makeup. It's fine. It's gonna make you look better. Just a little bit. You don't have to like beat your face and like do like a whole face of makeup. It's just, you just do like a little bit, like a little here and there.
So I have some thoughts here. I mean, first of all, in terms of sunscreen, I do hate the whole put it on your hands and apply it. I'm not that guy. I am just a spray. I close my eyes. I do some of this because I hate to have it on my hand. Yeah. So I'm a little bit like that. Not a fan. Let's see. So last week I went to the dermatologist and I had like a little something on my forehead. And I'm like, Doc, is this anything? And he's like, no, but we could just like blast it off if you want. So I said, absolutely, go ahead and do it. And then like, as he was doing it, I'm like, is this going to like leave a mark for a few days? And he's like, yeah, just a few days. It'll be fine. I'm like, all right, no big deal. I didn't realize I was actually doing content the next day with you. That was Thursday. And then I took a picture of myself today and sent it to you because I was wondering, I should put a little something on there. And I did. So I think my wife, Nori, did a nice job because you can't see, but you saw the before picture. It was pretty raw. It was pretty red. So I am not, you know, like a member of the band Kiss. I am not a big makeup guy. I am not like violently opposed. You know, the only thing I do with my hair, there are these shampoos now where you put a little shampoo in and the grays kind of become closer to what your natural color was. So like last week, my 9-year-old actually says to me, she goes, Daddy, when you were younger, did you have brown hair? But thanks, Emmy. That's really sweet of you. And in fact, I did. But like compared to Instagram photos, I can look at like from 2018 to 2019, I was actually much more gray. So I try not to be vain. I certainly don't do much. I think one time you saw me like attempting to clean my face and I didn't even know how to do it because I don't even like do anything at night before I go to bed. Like it takes me probably 10 to 12 minutes to get ready to go on air in the morning. So not elaborate, but I'm not violently opposed.
I don't know. I just think that if you want to make yourself feel better or more confident and makeup will do that for you, then I don't think there is a problem for that. You know, I think guys make fun of women because they think makeup is like a disguise and they look like two different people, which if you're using makeup right, you're just enhancing your features. You're not changing your features. But with guys, it's the same way. Like they'll grow facial hair or they'll do the hat and sunglass thing. Like a guy wearing a hat is just as bad as a girl wearing like a full face of makeup. A guy can take their hat off and look like a completely different person.
Oh, you mean the ones who are actually bald and are not using even it bald, as like a disguise?
They just look different. Like changes like the way their face shape is. It's just like when guys wear hats, it completely changes their face.
You mean, I'm sorry, just to clarify, you don't mean like on the golf course, you mean if like they're going out at night?
Anytime a guy wears a hat, like Jordan Spieth with a hat, Jordan Spieth without a hat.
But he looks much better with a hat. So why wouldn't he wear a hat?
That's what I'm saying. So if a girl looks better with makeup, why would she not wear makeup?
I'm pro makeup. Are you trying to tell me Stuart Sink shouldn't wear a hat?
I'm just saying there are things that people do to make themselves feel better and they feel more confident with wearing certain things, wearing a hat, not wearing a hat, wearing glasses, not wearing glasses, wearing makeup, not wearing makeup. So I don't think A-Rod should be getting shit on this one. If he wants to do something to make other men feel better about themselves, then more power to A-Rod.
Yeah, I mean, A-Rod is like the vainest human being alive. He's the guy who kisses himself in the mirror. Like whatever he does, we're going to make fun of. I'm a Coldplay fan, but if he's going to play Coldplay, you know, on a reel or Instagram story or whatever that was, I'm even going to make fun of him.
I just want to get blocked by A-Rod, okay? We don't want to cross that bridge too. I'm already blocked by Phil Mickelson. I don't need A-Rod and all the other.
That'd be a badge of honor, I think, if you got blocked by A-Rod. By the way, another golfer who looks way better with a hat on, I believe, is Tiger Woods. Would you agree with me there?
Yeah.
It's kind of in recession back there. Exactly.
I would say JT does too. Justin Thomas.
Interesting. I wouldn't have said him so much.
Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, I'm used to Brooks. I like the single swoosh. What do you think of Phil's sunglasses?
I like it. I think it makes him look a little bit younger and cooler.
Yeah.
I don't like Ricky's sunglasses though. I don't think they make him look cooler. I feel like Ricky needs to elevate his fashion game a little bit now that he's getting a little bit older. And he has this position of influence and power in the golf world. And he's wearing the same outfits that he was wearing, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And I would love to see him do something a little bit different, make his own line. I loved when he was doing the button ups, the untucked button ups. Those were cool. But I think he needs to like be a little bit more progressive and try different things and do new trends. And even if people hate them, like, I just wish he would push the boundaries a little bit more with his fashion.
When I was running through my, you know, Lives of Phil dissertation, I forgot when he came out to the golf course wearing a button down.
Oh yeah, the whole mizzen and main button down. So those are actually very comfortable, by the way.
Oh, and I forgot to mention the Phil Dance, the mizzen and main. That was I feel like, was that his classics transition into social media where he started to
become, that was like the first girl? That was the start of it where people were like, oh, this is a little different, but we love it. Again, another nice thing I've said about Phil, rack that up on the tally. Another thing before we wrap this episode up, I was mentioned in a rap song.
Oh God.
Well, if you want to call it a rap song, it was basically just garbage. But my name was dropped. It was the first time I was ever mentioned in a song. I am not going to mention the song's name. I am not going to mention who the guys are because I don't want to give them free clout.
Yeah.
Call me out. It was a Bryson DeChambeau pro rap song. So basically they just talked about how much they love Bryson DeChambeau, and the chorus is like, Paige Spranick, she don't know Bryson DeChambeau. it was a lyrical genius, guys. They really just knocked it out of the park. I mean, it was literally a hate crime for your ears. It was one of the worst songs I have ever heard in my entire life. It was cringy. It was terrible. And I feel bad for Bryson. If Bryson didn't sign off on this and he just got it, it made Bryson look worse because the song was so bad. And I feel bad for Bryson. I am sorry, Bryson. That was not a good look.
A hate crime for the ears is one of the best lines. That probably has to be, I was going to say that should be the title of this podcast, but we probably want it to be Happier Phil Mickelson, or, you know, the fact that Phil blocked you. So we'll let Tim come up with that one. I feel like, Eminem is the only white guy who's allowed to rap. Other than that, especially if you're wearing golf clothes, I mean, would you just stop? I mean, that song got just crushed on Twitter yesterday.
It's bad.
Yeah,
it's
I'm not going to mention the guys either. I don't remember the guy's name, but you know, I think is that one where you can take it as a compliment that you were mentioned in, or you'd rather not even be associated with such a bad song?
I don't want to be associated with a bad song. I was also a little pissed off because I do know one of the guys who was in the video, and I considered him also a friend, a social media friend, and he is, you know, said supportive things of me to my face, and I just wish he gave me a heads up about it. And they made it sound like he was the one who actually wrote the lyrics. So I wish he was like, hey, we're writing the song. It's really stupid. We put your name in it. Like, are you cool with that? Whatever. That would have been nice if he did that. I'm a little peeved off that he didn't do that. Just giving me a heads up. I'm also a little irritated because everyone and their moms talks about Bryson DeChambeau in a critical way. It's not like I am the only person out there who has ever said anything against Bryson. And so that was a little frustrating too, that I am now known as a Bryson hater. And I think we do say it because we're just joking about it. It's a bit, like, it's not serious majority of the time. And I have said things about him in the past, but recently I have not said anything bad about Bryson at all. So it's a little annoying that I'm known as like the biggest Bryson hater when I really could give two shits. And I think Bryson could give two shits. Like, he's not looking at me and is like, she's public enemy number one. I gotta watch out for Paige. Like, he doesn't care. He's in his mansion driving his Bentley. He's making millions and millions of dollars a year. He doesn't care what I have to say. No one cares, you know? So it's like, that's just annoying where, well, Phil does apparently.
Yes.
But it's just annoying that I'm known as like the hater when I feel like I talk about him not that much, considering how much other people talk about him on social media and in golf Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, look, they're using you and they're using your followers to get people riled up, to get more attention for their song. I mean, it worked because you responded to it. But in this case, perhaps it backfired because I would imagine if they took a poll, they'd be 99.9% in favor of Paige and 0.1% of the people who put together that disastrous melody. So, yeah, I mean, in some ways, all publicity is good publicity, but in this way, yeah, I understand you want to be like, ew, keep me out of it.
Just because the song was so bad, like there is nothing I could say to them that is worse than the public shame of putting that song out. It was very bad. But then this goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning of the episode. Is it hypocritical of me to be upset that they use me in a song when I have criticized Bryson? And I guess you could call me a Bryson hater. So am I being too sensitive or am I, you know, being hypocritical by being upset of them mentioning my name? I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Like I think my first reaction was like this rage of anger because I again knew the guy and I was like, just give me a fucking heads up. Like, just let me know. And maybe if he did, I would have retweeted it and I would have had fun with it.
But
instead I was blindsided by this of my name being in a chorus of like a pro Bryson DeChambeau rap song. It was just terrible. But now I don't really care. I think it's funny. The song was terrible. So it got no traction.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been great if it was intentionally terrible. Then I think it would have been funnier if they were trying to make like a horrible tribute song.
Yeah.
I think that's how they should have positioned it.
Yeah. No, it wasn't great. It was very bad. So on that note, we're wrapping the episode up finally. I need to go still cry and mourn over the fact that Phil hates me.
Yeah,
and no, all in all, it was a really exciting week of golf last week with the PGA. It was fun to watch it and feel like you're a part of it with all the fans there. And it was very, truly, truly special. So congrats to Phil Mickelson giving us a lot of really great content over the years. And for this podcast, I want to thank everyone for listening in and supporting me always with my opinions, whether you agree with them or you don't agree with them. Always Teddy, thank you for coming on. You are truly the best. And I'm going to cry. So we'll see you guys at some point. Again, download the podcast, please. Like, do something to make me feel better about this. Give me 5 stars. Write a nice review. Like, feel bad for the fact that Phil Mickelson blocked me. So because of that, go wherever you find your podcast. Download the podcast. Share with your friends. Leave 5 stars. Leave a nice review. Send me a nice message. I need it right now in my time of despair. We love you guys and catch you guys soon.
Follow Playing Around with Paige Renee on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.